Sports Radio 929 The Game. Thanks for tuning in here. Another edition of Off the Woodwork. I'm Craig Carlos Valentino, a.k.a. CCV. One man, Jarrett Smith. What up, bro?
Not much. Hey.
Good to be back.
Hey, 2 weeks in a row.
Say it ain't
so. It's a streak. It's a streak.
We've had those before, people. We always quote baseball when we get this, though. It's great to be back. Great to finally talk some more soccer. We're getting a T-minus like almost 1 month now. Down a home stretch, man, so definitely excited. It's been a lot of news in the world of soccer, especially when it comes to Atlanta United. There's a lot we got to get to. We finally have a name. A name has been announced for the USL affiliate team. We'll talk about that. Definitely, the schedule was out when we did our last show. It was actually right before the schedule came out, and so now we kind of want to react on what we saw there. And Dukes and Bell was able to have our president, Darren Eels, in the studio as the schedule came out, so we'll have a couple clips that we want to play and kind of comment on those, just in case you didn't get the chance to hear that. Of course, you can hear all our stuff on Off the Woodwork. It's on our iTunes. You can go on 929 The Games page. You can go into our Twitters. Mine's is at CCV929. Jarrett's is at JARRETT _Smith.
_Smith.
There it is. So you can go, again, follow us all there for any news and notes, especially when it comes to Atlanta United. But first, like I said, we talked about was the actual schedule coming out. 16 nationally televised games for Atlanta United, more than any other team in MLS. I guess the news is out, man. We're a great team to watch.
Apparently so. You know what? You're going to ride that golden goose? Ride that horse until it sinks into the ground. Not until it's dead. You ride that thing until it is under the earth itself.
Keep it coming.
And that's what the league is doing. Atlanta United's going to be on at least half of their games are nationally televised. And I believe a couple more can be flexed to national games later on in the season. So that's something else. Like, that's a lot of exposure. And Atlanta, I believe, is tied with LAFC for the most nationally televised games this year. League believes in this. The league is expecting a lot. And those television numbers, you're really hoping they jump this year. And because of that now, I mean, for Atlanta's sake, you're going to be on a lot.
Got the world watching.
You got the world watching. Go show out.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right, especially when you look at it from a TV point of view. I mean, of course, us here in Atlanta, we're going to watch them just because it's our team. You know, mm-hmm. We have a vested interest in it. But I think around the nation, you're going to want to watch a team that scores. That's exciting to watch. And all those things, when you think of Atlanta United, that's the first things that come to mind. Exciting to watch. Young, talented players score a bunch of goals. Get there early, because if you tune in the 10th minute, there's probably two goals already scored. So I think when you look at it from a TV point of view, it makes perfect sense to put a team like Atlanta United on the national scale, because there's one of those teams that's going to score goals and definitely score them in bunches. So I'm excited about the possibilities, man. It could be a great year.
On the other hand, the first game, the home opener, that's DC United. That's a team that traditionally has not been a team that's fun to watch. Now, DC United started to turn things around last year. They made some changes late in the season. And actually, they were banging pots and pans together late in the season in people's faces. It was impressive not to see them so much being a great team, but being a functioning team that looked like professionals. Because there were times, despite the fact they blew Atlanta away three times last year in perplexing fashion, they were not a good squad.
Exactly.
Don't let that get into the both of those things can be true. They are not mutually exclusive. Like, they beat Atlanta three times. That was weird. That's like, they also weren't good.
They're like the Vancouver Grizzlies in the 72 Chicago Bulls. Like, the one that won 72 wins. Yeah. They couldn't beat the freaking Grizzlies. They could beat everybody. Couldn't beat the Grizzlies who couldn't win 20 games.
There were years when the Braves couldn't beat the Montreal Expos.
Right?
Montreal Expos, aside from 94, going out there losing, you know, 80, 90 games.
And just like, own you. They owned us. Yeah. And it seemed like DC United, and Darren Hills even made the joke on Dukes and Bell. He said, let's start the season hopefully with Mercedes-Benz and a whole new thing, and maybe we can finally get 3 points when we play these guys for a change.
So that'll be exciting. This schedule is going to be a lot of fun, because last year you did have the games that people, I think, really wanted to see in Atlanta, and the teams they wanted to see didn't come here, and that being the Cascadia teams. People want to see Seattle,
yes,
Portland, even Vancouver to an extent. Vancouver, God knows what's happening out there right now.
Well, they were the buzz team going into last year, though. Everybody was they were everybody's darling pick, your dark horse that, you know, make some noise. And so, you definitely wanted to see them.
Now you've got all these teams coming here. You've got LAFC coming here. It's a good year for the schedule for Atlanta United.
Yeah, and speaking of the schedule, it looks like they've actually taken the expansion rather than having two sold-out games of 70,000. They've now moved it to four. So when you look at the schedule, March 11th, we mentioned the home opener against DC United. That's going to be a standing room only. You have June 30th when Orlando comes to town, which is always going to be amazing and definitely.
You only have one Orlando game here this year. And it rotates. Now you've got two games down there after you had two here this year. So
you know, that game's going to definitely mean something, because they love driving up here talking noise, you know, and that's our rival. So it's going to be a really good one. The one I like the most is the July 15th one versus Seattle, right after the World Cup final. It seems like the TV people just knew what they wanted to do, especially with the World Cup being over there. It makes it so much easier to say, okay, hey, it's in Russia. The game's going to be early. 2 o'clock right there, right after everybody's pretty much been watching a great World Cup final, you bleed right into Atlanta versus Seattle. Like you said, a team that we've wanted to come here, that's going to be an amazing atmosphere leading right after the World Cup.
If you haven't done it yet, and if you haven't been able to go tailgate in the Gulch, as long as the Gulch is still there, as long as like Amazon doesn't come in and turn it into an actual working facility, go to the Gulch. Go tailgate, even if it's not for this game, for a game, but definitely for this game, because you're going to see more Honda generators out there than in a NASCAR race with people powering TVs.
Everybody with flat screens and watching and squeezing in, trying to watch this match. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, they're going to get there early. They're going to go watch the World Cup. Then they're going to start drinking and making questionable decisions. They're going to go watch Atlanta United.
And hopefully by this time, we'll have a kind of a heads up of what we want to do as when it comes to our broadcast from pre and post. So if they have us out at some bars, we would love for you to come because we know we'll be there early, definitely watching the games. Don't know how good our show will be, but the atmosphere will be insane.
It will be a show.
It will definitely be a show.
Is it going to be a good show? It's going to be a show.
It's going to be a show, all right. And the final one, September 22nd versus Real Salt Lake. So those are the ones that they've already written in stone. That these are the games that we're going to try to get, you know, max sellouts, try to get 70,000 in the stands. Darren Yost kind of left it out there that, hey, depending on how the season goes and whatnot, we may, you know, maybe move some stuff around when it's all said and done. But at least we know we got two more bigger games and it'll be able to allow more fans to come and watch this team. So I'm excited about that capability because I took my kids to the playoff game last year. It was the first game they got to go to. I took my son to the opener. He was out there in the field with me. You know, told him he shouldn't have been on the field. Yeah, Craig breaking rules like usual. But I took the whole family to the playoff
game. Wrong place, right
time. Of course, that's how I roll. But I took my whole family to the actual, to the playoff game, and they had a blast. It was one of those things where, my son and daughter play soccer. They're 10 and 12, so they play soccer. So they loved it. They loved the atmosphere. And that's why I'm excited about when you're able to expand these things, because we already know if you're at 45,000, you got 30,000 season ticket holders already out of the gate. So you're only really letting 15,000 tickets that are still out there for a team that seems like all of Atlanta wants to see. And so when you expand it out to 70, you can bring in those families. Like I said, I can bring my daughters, my son, you know, all of them come out and come watch a game. So I'm excited about that possibility because they had a blast. And I don't know one person that went to Atlanta United game last year, even in the losses, that didn't say, man, that was a lot of fun to go to.
Absolutely. And I'm of the thought that this four teams, these four games, this will expand. I'm not a betting soul, but if I was, I'm looking at, let's go 7.5 is my over-under for games where it gets expanded, because you've got the season opener, the season closer, Portland, Seattle, LAFC, Toronto, Orlando.
Yeah, Orlando.
Now Real Salt Lake, like.
Yeah, you can see eight. You can see eight
games,
depending on how the season's going. So,
coming into the end of the season, like I think you end the season with Chicago, if I'm not mistaken. Decision day is going to be weird because we don't know what Chicago is going to look like that this year. Chicago might not run away with things early in the season and come back crashing down to earth. We don't really know what they're going to look like. So decision day might be important for everyone involved.
Yeah, you know, you're right. And I think especially when you talk about teams, and one of the things I thought was me and you had kind of hinted on well is a lot of this expansion that we're starting to see. Like you had mentioned that LA is coming in this year and you have a lot of it looks like MLS definitely wants to get into other cities. We had mentioned Sacramento. We mentioned, you know, Miami. We had talked about a lot of other places where MLS had looked to want to expand. And one of the questions that was actually offered up to our president, Darren Eales, was, hey, are we expanding too fast? Is the MLS expanding too fast? And he actually had a pretty good, you know, response to that answer.
I think at the moment they're being careful. So we've got we'll have 23 teams with LAFC coming in next year, and then you've got Nashville making it 24. They're going to announce one more, and they'll be Miami. Ultimately, they've said 28 is the number, and I think that's right to be cautious, because I agree with you, Mike. The danger is there's two things. One, you know, you try and spread too thin in terms of fans, but also in terms of players, because the player pool gets dissipated every time we have new teams. So, for example, this year we had an expansion draft, and, you know, we were fortunate that LAFC didn't take any of our players, but it's pretty frustrating that you build a squad together and then you could lose some of those players.
Right. And I think he's 100% right when it comes to expansion. People always worry about, are there too many teams out there? Is there enough talent out there at times? A lot of times, you're spreading a lot of this great talent too thin, so you only have one or two good players on teams compared to five or six different players on teams that make teams extremely competitive. And soccer's one of the sports where all 11 guys got to be working together. You can't just have one dude, unless he's an amazing guy, you know, unless he's a Messi, you can't really just carry the whole team by yourself. You need other players on your team. So I do like that, you know, this expansion has been slowly and it's been calculated smart.
It's been done properly, I think. And there's enough talent out there. I mean, there's a concern I've had that I've shared in the past about like USL and the lower divisions. You know, it's just a matter of aggregating the proper amount of talent when you expand the second division. And the same thing with MLS. You've just got to make sure you're bringing in talent because the talent's out there. It's not like you're putting in more teams and more slots than there are talent. The talent's out there, but you've got to go find it. You've got to be like Atlanta was and like Toronto and Columbus and go out and get talent. That doesn't always mean going out dropping $7 million, $15 million on a guy, Barco.
20, 22.
Yeah. Keep going.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't always mean dropping that money. It means being smart about stuff, bringing in guys on loan, finding guys like a Tito Vijaba, who's a couple million dollars, or bringing in a Yamil Assad on loan. Like being smart about it because the talent is there. And it's not about blowing the money out of the water. It's about being smart about it because that's where the difference right now between a team like Toronto and Atlanta and a team like LA Galaxy, who's got Dosto Santos. They've got guys out there who can play. I still don't hate Jossie Zardes as much as everyone else in the world. I think he's struggled significantly, but at the end of the day, like you got to spend the money smart.
And I think not only smart, like you said, but also realizing what guys can do to fit your system. That's what I think one of the major things that's always been overlooked with when it comes to Atlanta United is Tata picked the guys that can work for his system, guys that he can coach up, guys he can make better. It wasn't like you're like taking these random guys out there and be like, okay, his skill set doesn't fit what we want him to do. But like, no, this guy exactly has a skill set I want to do and I want to make that guy better. And I think when you like said, it goes back to, the guys like Carlos Bocanegra of the world that see guys out there and go, you know what, that guy out there has a skill set that we can use and we can enhance and make better. So I think when you have those right kind of guys in the organization, it makes it a whole lot easier to bring that kind of talent in. And speaking of, you kind of mentioned it, Barco. We can't go a segment without talking about Barco. And actually, the president was even asked about Barco.
I think we're contractually obligated.
Yeah, exactly. This is Barco Watch Day 30. Even the president was asked, and he gave the answer only the president could.
No, it's funny. Everyone's been asking me about this guy called Barco, who, like you said, apparently plays for a team down in South America. I think he's in Argentina. Look, we can't comment on players that are under contract with other clubs, but I think, you've seen it from the Darlington Nagby trade that we did. We're always looking to improve the team, and we'll always do that. Every single transfer window, we'll be looking aggressively to try and get better players and build on the team that we've got. So we're always on the lookout, and, I don't think our transfer work is done for this window. So, keep watching and you never know.
There you go. See, I love his answer so much better. Hey, I don't think we're done yet. This window, we still got a little bit of time to make this work. So at the end of the day, keep a lookout. And, it gives me some hope that, hey, maybe they'll find a way to meet in the middle. We keep hearing conflicting reports from both sides. Some people are closing. Some people are asking for less money. Some people are asking for more money. Hopefully at the end of the day, we get this thing done.
It's a nice jueves telenovela.
Yes. I mean, it's great telenovela.
It's fantastic work. And, yeah, he always gives that diplomatic answer. He's given a couple of really funny ones over the last few months whenever we've been around to interview him. It's people keep mentioning this guy. I don't know anything about
who's this guy you speak of.
I know nothing of what you speak. It's been fun, and I like their policy about it. To be honest, about don't comment on players that aren't under contract. I'm very okay with that. People are still going to ask the questions because that's just the way it works.
This way the media works,
but. It'd be nice when this thing is settled. And we've seen reports for like the last week, like, oh, could happen today. No, could happen tomorrow. Yep, could happen today.
I think anytime the word Barco comes up, our phones automatically shake. It just starts to get a little ticker underneath my phone. It comes in like, oh, Barco was mentioned today. And so, you're right.
I turned off Google alerts. I couldn't.
Exactly. Do Google alerts. I'm done with this. So. Mm-hmm. And I thought one of the great questions we were asked is you've seen all these different, and even mentioned it there, the Nagby trade and how this team, the way the season ended. And, we felt like there was definitely, it's tough to go out, especially on penalty kicks. But, we felt like there was still a little bit more meat on that bone of the season that we could have had and was able, to be able to at least make a run deep into the playoffs. And he kind of mentioned that. And one of the questions was asked is the goal, to win an actual cup?
Yeah, I think so. Look, I mean, I don't think we can be shy or bashful anymore. We made the playoffs last year. I've always said the first year was going to be the hardest. We've got Tata coming back. He knows the players. We've made some additions. And I think, we've got to now fess up and say we're going for the cup. That for us now is the aim. And that will always be our aim going forwards. We want to have a team that can always compete and have a chance of winning it.
And I like that mentality. Like I said, it was great first year. We didn't really know what we had. We just wanted to go out there and have fun and let these guys learn and play together. Now, from what you saw, it's like I love the way this team, we've talked about it like a couple times here on the show. It's they decided after season was over that was a great first season, but that wasn't good enough. So we need to do more. We need to be better. We need to get stronger in certain positions. And you've seen that this team is really out there. They're not just giving you the lip service. They're actually getting the players to do it.
Yeah, and this is a team now that, like last year, you made the playoffs. You were one win away from having a first-round bye, which is just it's absolutely absurd when you consider the fact that in 2017 you could have had a team get a first round bye. Like when Chicago did it back in the day when they won as an expansion team, it's really impressive. This is not to take away from anything they did, because that really was impressive. But it's kind of a different situation now, because you've got this craziness with so many teams in the league. You had plenty of talent back then.
Yep.
Don't diminish the talent they had back then. But with more teams, with more opportunity for parity, it was insane. And you really set a standard for yourself and for everybody else, for better or worse. It's absolutely for better. And now you've got something to chase after. And now you've got a shot to just go keep on building and keep getting better, because I think you got better already when you brought in Nagy. You brought in Franco Escobar. You still got all of your main pieces, and you've added more firepower. But you set a standard for yourself now. And that first year could have been a very much, okay, we're going to see where we can start from. Okay, you started halfway up the mountain. You're up at like the second base camp. Go ahead, acclimate for a month or so, and
get
then
back
we're
after
going.
It. Get yeah. back after it.
You're right back after it.
You know, you're right. I think it's like, especially when we talked about expansion and all these other teams and cities that may be coming in. It's like, you're right. You became the gold standard of this is how you want to do the first mm-hmm. year. But now as an organization, you got to reevaluate and say, okay, we want to be not only the team you talk about how you do the first year, but the franchise that you set going forward. You know, this is when you think of soccer, we think of how you put things together and legacy and dynasty and things like that. We want to be that. And so I think that they have the right mindset of that going forward. So I'm excited about that.
I'm excited to see eventually like Arthur Blank on the sideline in like the 83rd minute of a match in the playoffs. Like, oh, Atlanta's up like 2-0 in the playoffs, and Arthur Blank starts coming down in just the best looking suit that you can find in West Atlanta.
Doing his dance, man. If he's doing it, he's getting it too. And you know, like I said, and putting him on the Jumbotron in the 85th minute, mm-hmm. chances to hoist the cup. Oh yeah, everybody will be losing their mind. And like I said, speaking of, developing this team and making it a little better, we finally got a USL affiliate name.
Yes.
We took a little bit. We were wondering, all of us, if we saw so many different creative things on the internet. And Atlanta United too. What do you think, dude? I mean, you look at it. I'm not too bad on it, because you look at it. Toronto FC is Toronto FC 2. LA Galaxy is LA Galaxy 2. New York Red Bulls, New York Red Bulls 2. So there's precedent for this. But are you cool with the name, or did you want to see something a little bit more creative?
It doesn't really bother me. If they'd have done something more creative, I would have enjoyed it. But this isn't a deal breaker for
yeah.
me. This is, you're treating it like a reserve. That's your reserve team, basically. Okay.
It's your AAA baseball team. Yeah. We have the Rome Braves.
Like we got, I know we got the Gwinnett Stripers now.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
But I'm okay with it. Like, yeah, you've got a precedent for it. I'd have liked to see them get creative, but I'm not necessarily upset with them that they didn't, if that makes sense.
Right.
Kind of a roundabout way to go about it, but
I just look at our fan base, and our fan base is extremely creative in everything we do with the Golden Spike, with all the different, like, the footy mobs, all the different names.
People throwing around ATL 2 chains.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it just seems like this fan base is beyond creative, especially when it comes to just the supporter groups and the fans that, I would think that, you want to kind of stick with that theme would go on, which I understand. You don't want it to be cheesy, though, so you definitely don't want that. And you still want it to be professional, so I understand where they're going with it. You also create a culture. Like you said, at the end of the day, we're all part of the same brand. You look at a lot of the academies overseas, in England and whatnot, and you're playing for Manchester United Academy. You're paying for all these. They don't have different names. They're all the same thing. You're just trying to work your way up. So I understand the mentality behind it, but it would have been kind of cool to get something creative.
To me, it's not unlike Atlanta United. I was kind of on the name when they came in the first place. Like, that seems like a name that we just decided because it was safe.
we couldn't think of anything else. Let's go here.
And that maybe nothing else had the overwhelming favorite, and that one tested well with focus groups.
Yeah.
Because that's something they're going to do. For what the name lacks, same thing with the first team, the crest makes up for it.
And that was just where I'm going to pivot. When you look at everything and the way they set it up, though, you got to give the artwork of what they did was amazing. You put a big 2 in front of the instead of the A. You have a golden spike going through, which I think is absolutely amazing.
And then they got the golden spike collection down at the store. If no one's seen it, go down to the stores and see it. They are just steering into this golden spike thing really well.
Yes. And I think it's a great way, because it also is another reason why, not only you want to get there early to the games just because they're going to score pretty early, but you want to see who's the person doing it that week. Time and time again, I'm always looking over like, hey, who we got this
Archie
week?
Archie Eversole drove a spike in for Atlanta United. I don't know how else to explain what happened.
This is insane. Like, you see you had Dennis Schroeder. You have different – everybody who's Atlanta who wants to be part, considered Atlanta, is at these games really trying to be a person.
Eventually, they're probably going to have Migos just take turns and throw them.
Yeah, you're the A. You're the team. and you're the L. Exactly. And so I think I'm 100% agree with you. I think the artwork is absolutely amazing when it came down to it. They tied in everything that made it what's Atlanta. You made it. You have the five stripes. You have the circle seal. You have the two in the center, like I said, with the spike going through it. I thought the artwork was amazing on it. And another really cool thing is a lot of people may not know is that if you're a 2018 season ticket holder, you'll be provided three vouchers for the season tickets to redeem at for those Atlanta United 2 games. So it's a first come, first serve thing. But if you have, you know, season tickets, you'll be able to, you know, get three voucher tickets to go one of the games if they have them available. So be able to take your family and stuff, especially if you have a kid like me who couldn't tell you the difference between Amarone and anybody else on the other squad, but he just sees soccer and loves watching soccer be played. That's a great way to get your kids out there and for a regularly pretty cheap price, especially getting free tickets to go out there and make it a family event. So I like that a lot.
I love the fact that it is up in Gwinnett for now. That may change in the future. I know they can expand down in the academy over on Franklin Road in Cobb County. There's a chance you could put a stadium in there in the future and have them play there on the grounds, which are still an amazing training grounds. But for now, I do like the fact that it is up there, and it gives people who are in the North Metro an easier opportunity to go see that game. Like, if you're up in Johns Creek, up in Cherokee County even, like up in Gwinnett, Decatur area, if it probably is going to be easier for you to get over and watch the kids play for ATL UTD2 than it is to go downtown sometimes, because it's a bear to get in and out of the city.
True that.
Now, granted, that's not going to mean that, you know, as a cop-out, like, oh, we're just going to go watch that and not watch Atlanta United. No, of course, you'll still do that, but it'll be a lot of fun, I think. And I wrote a piece this morning about Atlanta United. The kids, the homegrown players, they're going to be playing up there and what you can expect. This team, for a USL team, for a reserve team, quote-unquote, it's going to be electric.
They got amazing talent down there.
You're going to see some stuff. Because you have a lot of guys like, okay, they have a lot of talent. Beyond that, they got kids that'll try stuff. Like, try amazing things.
Yeah.
You're going to see. It may not always come off. It may go, hey, remember that time that guy tried to bicycle kick from 30 yards out?
Right.
Did it work? Oh, no, it went 10 yards and went sideways. But it was really fun to watch. They've got a lot of kids down there that are going to try things. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, and that's the one cool thing when you think about this whole setup. And like I said, I love the whole the mentality when it comes to, you know, setting up a second team, because, like I said, I'm big on what's going to be feasible for family, what's going to be feasible for, you know, for fans. And so when you're able to set up this kind of thing and have it where you can take your kids and me, especially having three kids, where it costs an arm and a leg for me to be able to take my kids out to a game, I love that this mentality they have there. You have a lot of young talent. You're mirroring it after what you have there. Like I said, the logo's great. I'm okay with the name. I'm fine with it. I thought we could have definitely gotten a little bit more creative with the name. But I just love the artwork. I love what they're building there, and I love the culture that they're building. At the end of the day, that's what matters the most, because, like you said, we have a lot of young talent that's down there, a lot of guys that are going to be trying to fight to make that first squad. And so, like I said, those games around there are going to be amazing to go to, because those kids want to play for the big squad. So absolutely, I'm going to do whatever it takes on this field to make sure I can get on that pitch.
And that's one of the things I was beating home this morning is, there's not necessarily a bad thing if you have like an Andrew Carlton, a Chris Goslin, a Lagos Kunga, who spend the entire season down in Gwinnett. That's not necessarily a bad thing if it means that they continue to see growth and they might have some amazing games. What I want to see is a steady growth throughout the year. I want to see a development of leadership, development of like, okay, who's going to step up in certain situations. And as they continue to improve, we'll probably see things. I've had people tweeting all morning about like, oh, what if this guy does this? Where do we see Carlton? Where do you see Kunga? Where do you see Okonkwo? Like, you're going to see things kind of get mixed around, see where guys are comfortable, and see what kind of roster flexibility they can provide, because that's a big thing when you get to the big stage. That's one of my things about Julian Gressel that makes him so valuable going forward for Atlanta United. Rookie of the year was great. If he can become that Jacob Peterson 2.0, the player who can literally play anywhere in the midfield, that flexibility is fantastic. If Lagos Kunga can turn into a guy who can play on either wing, drop back and play the 8 sometimes, if Andrew Carlton can play either wing or slot into the 10, that's amazing. And if those guys can develop that down in USL, an entire season at USL does not mean that they failed.
Yeah,
it
no,
means
that they failed. I think you're 100% right. When it comes to younger guys, like we've always mentioned, iron sharpens iron. Yes. So you have a lot of young, hungry guys that are out there that want to play. And like we said, we've seen how long this season can be. You're playing till October. So at the end of the day, guys are going to get banged up. There's going to be opportunities for younger guys that if you show what you can do down there, you're going to get a start in a week to come up and be like, hey, let's put you on the bench here for this week and let's see what you can do. And then all of a sudden, in the 88th minute, I need a guy that can go out there, give me fresh legs, and get a goal. That could be your moment. That's what we always talk about. Was that the definition of luck is preparation meeting opportunity. Like at the end of the day, work your butt off, because you never know when the opportunity is going to come. So when it does get there, you can make sure you're lucky.
And you're a guy who played sports beyond just like, you know, from the youth level, high school up. As you progressed, Was there a fatigue factor involved sometimes? Like when you're like, because it steps up, it's harder.
You're playing against better competition. You're playing longer. You can tank it in high school and whatnot because you're just naturally gifted.
Yeah.
You have God given talent that's just better than everybody. So you don't have to be at 100% all the time. When you, like you mentioned it, we talked about when it comes to baseball, when you go from, you know, single A to double A, everybody was the beast at single A that are in double A. Everybody at triple A was a beast at double A. It's like that when you take that next step up, you forget that everybody who took that step up with you were beasts at some point. So you got to keep pushing yourself.
I'll be curious to see how fatigue sets in with these guys. How, and not just physical, but mental fatigue, like just that wear and tear of a season. And this is their chance to really get a lot of time and log a lot of minutes. The iron sharpens iron thing. I'd rather them get all of their minutes at USL this year and be starting and impacting a game and making mistakes and learning and getting better than to see them picking up garbage minutes at the end of games in MLS.
True. No, you're 100% right there. And so, like I said, I'm definitely excited about what's to come when it comes to the USL team because, like I said, I think there's a lot of great talent down there, and it's going to be a lot of great matches to be able to watch. Just a flip over real quick. We're using our throw-in segment. We talk about some of the stuff that's going around in the world of soccer, and one of the most important stories seemed to came out was Jonathan Gonzalez. Like, he's going to be switching over to the Mexican national team. For people who don't know, he has, you know, dual heritage. His family, you know, is also Mexican along with being American. And he started playing for the United States for the younger team when he was about 14. And he decided, along with them not making the World Cup, it was also another big decision why. But just he said the way he was treated by the national team, by the upper and whatnot people, that he decided that, you know what, it's just better for me to make the switch at this time. Do you knock him for it?
I don't knock him for it. If you haven't done it yet, and get on soccer Twitter, there's still pitchforks out. There's still torches that have not burned out. Soccer America had a piece that was a commentary. Brad Rothenberg, who was interviewed about all of this and about the way that U.S. soccer approaches these dual nationals and the way they've handled things. And it will get you legitimately angry about the way things were done. I don't necessarily knock Gonzalez for going. It's the same theory I have when it comes to recruits for college. Mm-hmm. If a guy chooses a school, do not go try and ruin that kid's life for a personal choice.
Yeah.
The U.S. lost him either by, as Rothenberg says, quote, our federation lost Jonathan Gonzalez either by its own arrogance, apathy, or incompetence.
That's 100% true.
I mean, end quote, that's where, you know, you can pick.
We've seen this from the national team, especially when it comes from the higher above's. When it comes to, we just assume that, okay, America's this great thing in the whole wide world, and everybody wants to be part of it no matter what. And speaking of me, this kind of hits home to me because I am a mixed kid. I have mixed heritage. My family is from Mexico. I have family that is from America. And so it's like, well, I sit there and I'll cheer for the American national team, but I'm American first. I feel like I'm American first, but I've never not, like, pushed out that side of my heritage when I go see my abuelitas and all, and when I go back home and go down to Guadalajara and spend time with my family. So I understand where he's coming from and where he's torn in there. And if you just assume that all of a sudden that he even mentioned it, I bleed, you know, red, white, and blue. I felt myself as an American stuff, but when you guys just push me to the side and no one even wants to ask me if I want to play for the national team or whatnot, and my other heritage is saying, hey, we got a spot for you if you want to come play, we would love for you. I don't knock him for going. I understand that. At the end of the day, you can't just assume that everybody is just going to be like, all right, you're just going to throw dirt in my face, and I'm just going to take it because I'm an American. Like, no. At the end of the day, I'm going to do what's best for me, you know? Yeah. And I think that's the most American thing I've ever heard of, doing what's best for me. And at the end of the day, what's the best for him is playing soccer, and especially for an organization that wants him to play for him. And if the United States national program thinks that at the end of the day that they can just treat mixed heritage players that, oh, well, since they're in America, then, you know, they'll want to play here and not give them the opportunities to be able to play, then he won't be the first. I'm sorry, he'll be the first. He won't be the last.
No, and look, this is not the thing that will eternally cripple U.S. soccer, but it's a bad look.
It is.
And especially the way it was handled. Like, you even had, okay, here's another one. Here's another quote out of it. Here it is. Thomas Rongen, who, when he visited the Gonzalez household as a U.S. soccer's chief scout, said his dad is so Mexican that he wanted him to represent Mexico, and I knew it was a losing battle probably.
But, and that's what loses me. If you went to my house or my uncle's house, you would think that they would want me to play for the Mexican national team. That's just heritage. They're just proud of where they're from. At the end of the day, any father, and I speak as a father, will want what's best for their kid. So if what's best for my kids is playing for the United States national team, then that's what I'm going to want. You see that. We just joked about football. There's parents that went to Alabama, and your kid got a full ride to Auburn. Hey, I'm not going to wear your colors, but I'm still going to cheer for my son while he's on the field. It's the same exact mentality. And when you hear something like that from the chief scout, it's like, have you never, like, I guess you've never been to the South and seen football, huh? Like how as certain families can be like, at the end of the day, I love you because you're my son and I'll always have your back, but I ain't going to wear those colors.
This is something the U.S. is going to have to deal with in the future, though, in terms of dealing with, you know, how they approach recruiting dual national kids. I mean, are you going to go into every household? Oh, this family, like this player is Mexican-American and his parents, you know, his parents, they still are very proud of their Mexican heritage. So we're not even going to bother. Is that how you're going to approach it?
He's Argentinian. He's from Argentinian descent. He's got a picture of Messi on the wall. He can't play for us. Like
how many?
What?
how many kids? And not just, especially Atlanta's a really nice little petri dish for this because of the diversity of Atlanta. How many other countries?
A huge melting pot here. You're 100% right when it comes to different ethnicities from Central America and South America and stuff. And so, and that's what
you've
like
got
said.
Two of them in your they just graduated your academy as homegrown players. Okonkwo was Nigerian, I believe, and I believe Lagos Kunga was, I believe it was Angola. He was originally from. Like you've got guys who were from countries. Granted, they left those countries and they came here. I believe in Lagos's case, it was his refugee status, but it's. You're always going to have guys, especially in Atlanta. You've got a lot of just about every country in Central and South America represented here. Are you going to go to those houses and see that they're proud of where they came from?
Yeah,
as you would be as well.
Yeah, you got to be proud of your heritage.
Yeah,
it's like
are you going to walk into that house and decide, oh, well, this guy they're proud of that. So I guess you know,
his family's from Portugal, so yeah, he don't want to play for us. And I mean, and like I said, especially for a sport that when we always joke when we say, where's the best soccer players at? We say they're playing basketball, they're playing football, they're playing baseball. Like, all right, so the kids that actually want to play, you want to let them leave because you think that at the end of the day, you have a mentality about where their heritage or where their heart's going to lie. I think that's a foolish mistake when it comes to trying to get the best players to play for the United States team.
This will be a big topic for the next year and plus and getting into the next Olympic, next World Cup cycle for the United States because there's going to be a lot of young talent coming up. The pool is good. It can be better. It's worse off because you don't have Jonathan Gonzalez, but you can learn from
it. Yeah, and that's the key thing. I think if you learn from it, if you realize where we – and that's United States soccer and period. Can you learn from this World Cup not making it? Can you learn from these kind of things? As long as you can learn from them and correct them, then I'm all for it because we all make mistakes. At the end of the day, it's just making the same mistake.
If you keep making the same mistake, you deserve what you get in this case.
And it's 100%.
And you're going to keep losing dual national kids who are, you know, who are Latin, who are Latino or Hispanic, wherever they're from, wherever their family's from. And you're going to keep losing them.
And just like we talk about in other sports, and the worst part is you put a chip on those kids' shoulders, and when they come back and play against you, somehow they send a goal off. They go Randy Moss on you like you're playing the Cowboys, just drop a 200 every time you play them.
What was it, Moss's stat line that game? Like 3 catches, 175 yards, and 3 touchdowns?
3 touchdowns, like, and loving every moment of it. And like I said, at the end of the day, you create chips on these young kids' shoulders to prove that you shouldn't have let me go. You do the Aaron Rodgers, all 22 teams are going to pass on me, I'm going to stick it to all the other 22 teams. Yep. And so, yeah. But like I said, there's a lot going on. We'll definitely get back to you guys next week. Like I said, definitely follow us on Off the Woodwork. You can go to, we're on iTunes. You can find us on 99 The Game. Your article you just wrote on the USL is where?
It's on 99thegame.com.
As well, too. So you can definitely hit up the article there. We took bits and pieces from the Dukes and Bell interview of Darren Eales. That's also on our podcast as well. You can find that on iTunes at 99 The Game if you want to hear that interview in its entirety. Nashville, February 10th. Down the home stretch, we are officially less than a month away.
Tickets are disappearing rapidly. By the time you hear this, you're going to probably be looking secondary market.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, you thought Alabama, Georgia tickets were tough to find. Wait till you find out next week when we talk about these tickets when it comes up to it. Talk to you guys. See? Oh, yeah, I know it's too soon. I know it's been a tough week for all the Georgia fans. Yeah, it's all right. I understand. You know what? Darren Eales picked Alabama, though. Yeah, it was kind of tough. Yeah, I mean, at
least the man is a winner.
Yeah, he is a winner. Jay, talk to you next week, man.
All right, man.
Peace.